cancer diagnosis at the age of 32, my mom and I talked a lot about the shock of that diagnosis, given several doctors told us you're too young to have endometrial cancer. After much discussion, we began to feel driven to inform and help educate other young women about what symptoms they should be concerned.
Having both been teachers, it seemed natural for us to look for a way to share Alex's cancer journey in order to help other young women avoid such a shocking diagnosis or possibly navigate a similar path. A podcast seemed the best way to get the word out, and that's how Down There Aware was born.
4 years later, our mother-daughter duo has gone from educating and informing to advocacy and action, with a fresh and sometimes very interesting and somewhat humorous multi-generational perspective.
We look forward to sharing with you season 4 as we advocate, take action, and make it a priority to always be
Down There Aware.
Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware. Down There Aware. We've been on hiatus. You've probably seen some repost.
Some good ones for... What was it called? What was
Gynecologic Cancer Awareness Month.
Oh, every month is something.
Yep, September. And interestingly enough, September is Gynecologic Cancer Awareness Month as well as Uterine Cancer Awareness Month.
Well, that's fitting. They would be together, but uterine is part of gynecologic
right.
cancer. So, kind of strange.
It's fine. But so we shared some fun facts, interesting facts, important facts.
Not too fun.
Not fun. About gynecologic cancer and all of that stuff that's happening. We replayed Johanna Holler's story because we had talked about it in our last episode. And we reposted my cancer story and mom's
reaction to your cancer story.
So yeah, it's been a good month of September.
Yeah.
We kind of went that route because September was busy.
Busy month, lots of travel, lots happening.
A lot happening, but we're back. It's October.
It's October.
Can you tell? It's breast cancer awareness month.
We have our pink on. I hope you put the wide angle lens on it to get these puffy sleeves in because they are puffy.
I have some shoulder pads
and I've got the puffy sleeves.
Yeah. So
but we've got the pink for Pinktober.
Yeah, Pinktober. And we were thinking about what are we going to talk about this week and wanted to, you know, do something timely and relevant. And I came across a post, I wish I had my phone, that I shared with mom that talked about the kind of ugly side of Pinktober. But we'll get into that later because I think we're going to share some facts about breast cancer and all of that stuff.
Well, I know we've kind of alluded to this different times that you know, I don't want to speak for you, but I know for me, after your cancer diagnosis, I got frustrated about Pinktober, only because there wasn't a Peachtober.
I mean, Peachtember.
Yeah, something. Just because I saw so much attention on breast cancer and... You know, not to say there shouldn't be attention on it. We've dealt with friends and family who have had that diagnosis, and it's horrific. And we want attention, and we want money on it to research. But we also want it on the other cancers.
Right.
And after your diagnosis, really wanted it on uterine cancer, gynecologic cancers.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why... breast cancer took off. It's a marketing, it's just a really easy marketing ploy, right? I remember, I think it was in the 90s where they came up with Save the Tatas. Oh, that's so cute. Mm-hmm. We can talk about boobs in a fun way. Lots of cutesy things. And I mean, I remember even back in high school, our cheerleaders had pink pom-poms during October. Same with when I was in college, they had pink pom-poms. I saw recently, our sheriff's, the head sheriff guy, what's his title? Chief Sheriff. We'll make it up. His wife has had breast cancer, but like anything on his uniform that had been white was pink, hot pink, like on his green sheriff's uniform. And everybody does it, like any industry.
Well, the NFL, they wear pink, yep. And you know,
just any industry you can think about. And, you know, it is interesting because and we'll just get to it now. That negative post I saw talked about making sure that if you are buying a product that has a pink ribbon on it or says, you know, fight the fight or support the cause or whatever, you probably should make sure where that money is going. Yeah. Because it's not always going to where you think it is.
Well, and I think it's just like anything, especially in this technological age we're in. People take things and make them something they're not. So, you know, throwing that pink ribbon on something, they know that a lot of people won't take the time and effort to check to right. be sure where the money goes. They figure we'll just do this and they'll buy our product.
Right.
And so it's like anything. We have to be our own advocate. We've talked about that mm-hmm. so much. And we have to do it in where our money goes to and who we support.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, now everywhere you go, I mean, you could drive through McDonald's, you could go shop at Nordstrom, you could go to the gas station and fill up your car. And they're like, do you want to round up for insert charity here? Mm-hmm. And they kind of guilt you, right? Like in a way of, it's just a few cents, round up. Well, all that is a tax break for the company.
Yeah.
Because they're making the donation. You're not making the donation. They're going to make that donation on your behalf and they get the tax benefit. And you imagine everybody driving through McDonald's rounds up 10, 15, 30 cents, whatever it is. They're giving away hundreds of thousands, if not, you know, millions of dollars. Yeah. And they're getting a tax break on that. Now, we can get into all kinds of things with that. But well, it just is, you know, if you want to be charitable and do your research and know what you're giving to.
Yeah. Everybody has their own favorites. I have my own favorite charities that I contribute to. That's where I give donations. And it's because they're important to me. It's because I have researched them and I know where they spend their money. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to argue with somebody else because they give to some other charity. I don't care. It's your money. This is my money. People need to give where they feel led.
Right. And, you know, I think I've said this a million times. My master's degree is in nonprofit management and I currently work in development. But you will see there are a lot of websites like Charity Navigator is a really popular one. And it gives a score to the nonprofit based on where's their money go? What are, you know, have they had problems with the IRS? All kinds of things. And I just want to give a caveat. Don't only use that as your score, because a lot of that is, well, what's the percentage of money that goes to programs versus money that goes to overhead and things like that. And to run a charity, especially a smaller organization, you're going to have a lot of overhead and things before you can really start making an impact. So again, you do you. Give to who you want to give to. If they are supporting something that you feel passionate about, I think that's where your money should go.
Yeah.
No matter what it is.
And getting back to my perception of October, Pinktober, and how I grew to change that. In researching for the podcast, I have really been astonished at the data mm-hmm. around breast cancer compared to other cancers. And I think that has made me feel better about all of the attention to breast cancer research and attention to supporting people who have breast cancer as opposed to the other cancers, because it's unreal how many people get breast cancer.
It really is. And I will say when I was first diagnosed, you know, mom's frustration was like my vengeance of like, oh, these people, they have October and they get all this money and they get all whatever. And then I started doing research and I was like, well, yeah, because it, you know, like uterine cancer, I think off the top of my head is like the fourth largest cancer in the country, but it pales in comparison in numbers. And so.
So that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today, since it's our first podcast episode in the month of October, Pinktober. So I did a little research and looked at the Breast Cancer Research Foundation website and found that breast cancer is the most common cancer worldwide, surpassing lung cancer for the first time in 2020. Now think about that.
That's kind of crazy.
The most common cancer worldwide, just surpassing lung cancer for the first time 3 years ago. And the most common cancer diagnosed in American women. The most common. So they need a lot of money and attention for breast cancer. Plus, we also know breast cancer metastasize, oftentimes, not always, but can metastasize. And so...
Well, a lot of cancers can metastasize.
Well, that's true. But there are people who start with breast cancer and they still call it breast cancer, I've learned, after the metastasis. But they get other cancers because of that oftentimes. Reading on some of the data, in 2020, about 2.3 million women were diagnosed with breast cancer. That's worldwide, 2.3 million. And out of those, 685,000 died. So that alone...
That's still a really high death rate.
That's what I was just going to say. That alone is a pretty high death rate, and which it makes it very obvious why we need more money for research, because we need something to work.
Well, and so do you have the number of women who die in America, like the percentage of women who get breast cancer die in the United States?
I will look and see.
Because my only question is, worldwide, we know that access to healthcare in third world countries is not great. So like, are they counting people who are dying who don't have access to treatments that are already exist? So we don't need like R&D dollars. We need travel to Ghana and give them treatment dollars. Like, I don't know.
Well, I see here in 2023, an estimated 300,590 people will be diagnosed with breast cancer.
In the States.
Yes, in the U.S. But it doesn't have
the
mortality.
So we don't know how many are dying.
It doesn't have the mortality rate at all.
I just imagine, and I'll put it on the screen if I'm wrong, but I just imagine that the percentage of women dying in the United States is lower cancer.
I would think so too.
Than the overall world rate.
Yeah, I should have that, but we'll...
And that doesn't make it less important. And I think that's where I struggle with, is, you know, we put a lot of money into an effort into things that are big, right? Like breast cancer affects the most people, so we need to give them a lot of money. And we do. But at the same time, childhood cancer is one of the least funded cancers because it's rare and it's ever changing and it's a difficult thing to study. So it's more expensive to study. And so it's one of those things where, you know, premenopausal uterine cancer is not actively, aggressively, I should say, funded for research and prevention and things like that. So, you know, I struggle and kind of walk this tightrope of, yeah, they have so many more people, they're dying, they need this, but like, here are these people too, even though they're not in mass, but they are there.
Well, we definitely need more research, better treatment for every cancer. Yeah. I mean, cancer, period, has just taken over the medical community. You keep talking. I'm going to keep looking for what you...
Sure. Well, and something that also popped up was our conversation with Trevera and how they, you know, are dealing with late stage patients, but they're goal is to eventually have one of these tabletop systems in every lab across the country where you can, you know, your doctor can run your test right there. And maybe it gets to a place where it's so affordable that it doesn't have to be late stage, right? It could be in any stage to make sure that that chemo drug or whatever drug is going to work for them. And so it makes me think about people like that. And that's where I think the R&D dollars should go, because those are solutions that are seemingly a win-win. Like, we had that conversation with our Trevera folks. It just is positive all the way around. And again, caveat, results are still early and they're, you know, pretty small in their sample size, but it looks promising.
And I looked through both these articles, didn't find what you were asking, the mortality rate in the United States alone. However, I did find, and let me see where I got this, because this is a different one than the American Cancer. Oh, no, this is the American Cancer Society. The other was the Research Foundation. In the American Cancer Society information, it says breast cancer incidence rates in the United States began decreasing in 2000 after increasing for the previous two decades. They dropped by 7% from 2002 to 2003 alone. And one theory is that this decrease was partially due to the reduced use of hormone replacement therapy. Because HRT was a big thing when people started having hysterectomies. Mm-hmm. That was, there was no question. You had to go on HRT. Yeah. But then there was a study published in 2002 that said hormone replacement therapy contributed to breast cancer. Mm-hmm. There have since been other studies that contradict that. So I still don't know that anybody knows.
Well, and I think it depends on, you know, which kind of breast cancer.
Exactly.
Because estrogen-fed breast cancer, right, and then there's other.
But just the fact that there's been a great decrease, I think, is huge.
Yeah.
It says, in recent years, incidence rates have increased slightly by 0.5% per year. Breast cancer is still one of the leading causes of cancer-related deaths in United States women, second only to lung cancer.
Hmm. So in the States, we haven't surpassed lung cancer, but in the world it has.
Right, right. And something we have talked about with genetic testing, BRCA genes and that kind of thing, that a woman's risk of breast cancer nearly doubles if she has a first degree relative who's been diagnosed, like a mother, sister, daughter. Mm-hmm. And approximately 15% of women who get breast cancer have a family member who's been diagnosed.
Hmm.
Now, we have some friends who have been diagnosed and had no family history whatsoever. So, you know, 15%, it's not a huge,
right,
not a huge percentage. So the other 85% don't have,
right,
a first degree relative. An increased ovarian cancer risk is also associated with BRCA.
Mm-hmm.
In men, now I found this really interesting. In men, BRCA2 mutations are associated with a lifetime breast cancer risk of 6.8%. BRCA1 mutations are less frequent, are a less frequent cause of breast cancer in men.
Hmm.
So that very
is
little,
that. Do you think that's the like estrogen one?
I don't know, but that one little difference.
Yeah. Well, and I was gonna say too. You know, we're talking about Pinktober and women and all this, but like men get breast cancer too.
Yeah.
Men have breast tissue. And so, you know, they can still get it. And I think it's harder for men to like get diagnosed and figure out what it is, because you're not necessarily in the habit of doing a self-exam and going, you know, right, you don't get an exam once a year at the gynecologist, obviously.
And you don't get a mammogram regularly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, because of that, this particular paper says the most significant risk factors for breast cancer, and this is so disheartening, most significant risk factors are being a woman and getting older,
which is just part of life.
Yeah, I mean, those are the most significant risk factors.
Well, I think it's funny, it's probably not written down anywhere, but the most significant risk factor of getting uterine cancer is having a uterus. Like when you think,
yeah,
when you think, I mean, you can't get it. That is one cancer uterine cancer, ovarian cancer, vulvar cancer, vaginal cancer. I'm missing one. What's the fifth one? Cervical cancer. All of those parts are only in women. So, like, you know, kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But, well, we hope that this was a little bit of, you know, Pinktober, but in a
positive light.
Positive light, but also be cautious when you're buying pink things in the store with ribbons on them. And certainly we want to support our pink sisters and brothers and their organizations, because, you know, the research does need to happen and they do need to be funded. But there are some less than savory folks out there making a dollar off of slapping a pink ribbon on it.
Well, and I do want to own up to my own bias was, and I was frustrated with Pinktober the first couple years after your diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I was really frustrated. Yeah,
I even posted a couple times of like, not all cancers are pink.
Yeah.
And I think more so than vilifying breast cancer, to me, that statement means October isn't the only month that you can care about cancer.
Yeah, any cancer.
Right. And I mean, like I saw last week of September, I saw companies ramping up and like the NFL had already started changing things and, you know, advertisements were ramping up to say, oh, pink. And I'm like, cool. Why can't we have this vibrancy and enthusiasm about all cancers, mm-hmm. you know? And I think it especially hits hard because Gynecologic Cancer Awareness Month comes right before.
Yeah.
Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
So before it was even over, everybody was going pink.
Right. They had already moved on. And like, if they had even acknowledged it.
Yeah.
You know, and even the cancer center that I go to, it's uterine cancer, gynecologic cancer, and I believe, I always forget, one is ovarian in September and one is cervical in January, I think. But they're both the same color, I think. Anyway, but the cancer center I go to, which has a gynecologic cancer practice in it, they didn't put Gynecologic Cancer Awareness Month.
No.
They put Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month or whichever one it was in addition to. And I was like, guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's because it's less frequent. And generally speaking, uterine cancer is treatable. And most women who are detected early live young or old.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think it's less about vilifying breast cancer and breast cancer patients and large organizations that, you know, support breast cancer research, and more of like that adage from what I'm going to leave this in because I look stupid. What is it?
Don't know
from improv, where it's like you always say yes and.
Oh,
right. Instead of saying yes or no, right? In improv, you always say yes and then you continue the conversation. I just want a little bit of yes and with cancer.
Yeah.
Like yes, breast cancer and uterine cancer and ovarian cancer.
Well, I love research and I'm happy that I was able to delve a little deeper. It made me feel better about Pinktober. And wearing my puffy sleeves and talking about this today and how we're going to go forward this month. So I just hope that all cancers can eventually get this kind of attention. Maybe not necessarily with a colored month, but
I mean, it would be nice that if everybody knew, right, that September was breast cancer or September was uterine, you know, cancer awareness month. And I think back to the when we used to have Wear Purple Day when we first started. And I remember the very first time we did it, I was on a work trip. And the day we were doing it, I was flying and I wore a purple shirt, you know, on the plane. And I just got to thinking, wouldn't it be nice if people knew that I'm wearing purple for that? It's not just a girl wearing a purple shirt.
Right.
You know, because like now, if I wear pink in October,
people know
instantaneously people are going to associate it, whether I want it to or mean it to or not, are going to associate it with that for good or bad. Right. It it's in people's minds. And again, we're not vilifying anything that's going on, but
I think it takes just what we're doing and what other people are doing, you know, our little podcast, whatever little ripple effect can happen from it. And other people are doing plenty more than that. So, you know, all you can do is what you can do.
That's very true. So,
and that's what we're doing.
And go do what you can do.
That's right.
This week.
Get up and go.
Gotta make go. Okay, this mic's driving me nuts. Sorry for all of the extenuating noises that you've heard. That's not a phrase, extenuating noises.
There's going to be a lot of audio.
There's going to be a lot of stuff. So, anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Down There Aware. Be sure to like and subscribe on our new YouTube channel, as well as on your favorite podcast platform. You can find us at Down There Aware on all social media sites, Twitter, Pinterest, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. If you have it, we're there at Down There Aware. You can learn more on our website, www.downthereaware.com, and always get in touch with us, downthereaware@gmail.com. See you next week.